I agree with everything that Peter said, but I'm going to put a little bit of a different slant on it. I'm very fortunate to be able to speak with you today about school-based healthcare, school-based health centers and how they can contribute to the delivery of immunizations in adolescents. Healthcare delivery efforts in schools vary widely in scope as they're dependent on school budgets and health priorities that are set at the local level. A district can have virtually no health services or education, some have limiting nursing services, and some provide comprehensive healthcare centers staffed by a variety of disciplines. And many of you know a lot more about this than I do since you work in schools. What I'd like to do in this talk is first provide a little bit of background regarding school-based health centers nationally, some of which Peter has done, but I'd like to emphasize slightly different things, provide you some new data about adolescent immunization delivery in school-based health centers, then provide an overview of adolescent immunization delivery in the Denver school-based health center, sort of as an example of a successful model, and then summarize some of the pros and cons of school-based health centers as sites for adolescent immunization delivery. The school-based health center model generally encompasses provision of comprehensive healthcare services on the school campus, or it can include mobile units that go to schools. And this care is usually provided by a multidisciplinary team, including nurses, nurse practitioners, physicians assistants, behavioral health professionals, and physicians. These school-based health centers, as Peter noted, are usually located by design in schools with a high percentage of low-income, medically underserved children. In 2004 and 5, I just have to, the data Peter presented was from 2002, there are now over 1,700 school-based health centers. This figure shows density of school-based health centers in the United States, and this is based on 2005 data. As you can see, there are 6 states that have no school-based health centers, and there's concentration of these centers in mid-Atlantic states, southeastern, south central, and south and western states, and to some extent in the Midwest. This just shows a graph of how they're increasing, and it's been updated to 2004 data. And basically, the rate of increase is about 100 to 150 new school-based health centers per year, which Peter was pretty on target, I think, with your estimates. They are predominantly in either high schools, 30%, or some combination of middle school with high school, junior high, K-12, and middle. And a minority, 20%, are only in elementary schools. The kinds of health services offered most consistently are comprehensive primary care, acute and chronic illness care, and immunizations. In addition, many of these health centers also provide substance abuse counseling, mental health, dental care, and limited pharmacy and laboratory services. The next group of slides present data from a survey that was just completed, 1 week ago, by Dr. Matt Daly at the University of Colorado, who is here somewhere in the audience, and other colleagues, in collaboration with Denver Health and Hospitals, the National Assembly on School-Based Healthcare, and our colleagues at CDC. The objectives were to assess in a national sample of school-based health centers that serve adolescents what their current vaccination practices are and what they perceive as barriers to providing immunizations in this setting. The National Assembly on School-Based Healthcare has the most comprehensive list of school-based health centers, and they currently list 1725, of which we randomly selected 1,000 that served adolescents 11 to 18, provided preventive or sick care, and were either on the grounds or mobile. We had 828 that were survey eligible, a 58% response rate, and of the 483 responders, 85% provided immunizations to adolescents. In terms of type of school, overwhelmingly these are in public traditional settings or public non-traditional magnet alternative and charter and vocational schools, very small percentages in parochial religious or non-parochial private schools. All of these school-based health centers are funded by multiple sources, and that's why these numbers add to well over 100%. 64% bill insurance for some of their care, and this is usually Medicaid and SCHIP. 58% get state government support. About half get support from nonprofit or philanthropic foundations. 34% from the school district, about a third from the federal government, 25% from the city and county government, and 17% get support from corporations or private businesses. As I said, 85% currently provide vaccines, and this slide lists the vaccines they report, that the percentage reporting using each of these antigens. And the percentages are really very high for most of these vaccines. We were particularly interested in the percentage that were giving HPV, since there's been at least some concern that this might not be a popular vaccine to give in a school setting. But actually, you know, 80% of these schools were giving it, as high as the figures for meningococcal, and really very close to all of the other antigens. Virtually all of the school-based health centers vaccinate patients with no health insurance, Medicaid, and the majority also vaccinate kids with SCHIP. 82% say they vaccinate children with private insurance. However, only 38% bill private insurance for vaccines. This disconnect is something I want to talk about again when I get to the Denver example, but it's one of the major problems for administration of vaccines in school settings. And not surprisingly, the vast majority participate in VFC. In terms of consent issues, 86% of these school-based health centers see adolescents always or frequently without a parent. How do they obtain consent for vaccines? 76% send forms home with the student. 65% do obtain consent when the parent is at a visit, but as I just told you, that's not very frequently. 45% obtain consent at school registration, 27% by mail or fax, and 14% get verbal consent by phone. How do they use vaccine information statements? 67% give VIS forms to parents at the time of a visit if they see the parents, but again, this is not a very frequent occurrence. 63% send the VIS form home with students before vaccination. Interestingly, 42% send them home with the student after vaccination. 25% mail the VIS form to parents before vaccination. 14% give out the form at school registration, and 8% mail to the parents after vaccination. One of the issues that worries people about school-based health centers is whether the provision of immunizations at school can exacerbate the problem of record scatter if there's not communication with the primary care provider or PCP. 45% of the schools that we surveyed reported that greater than 50% of students have a PCP outside of the school-based health center, which is certainly in line with Peter's data. How do they keep the PCP in the loop? 66% rely on the parents or the patients to notify the primary care provider. 58% rely on a registry, either a regional or a state registry or immunization information system. And 50% send letters, faxes, or telephone the PCP. Obviously, these also total to well over 100%, so most people are using multiple methods. How do they remind or recall patients within the schools? The vast majority send a message directly to the student at school, 62%. A little over a half mail a reminder home, 53% telephone, and very small amounts use email. We next looked at barriers to vaccinating, and we divided this in terms of whether the school immunizes or doesn't immunize, because we thought the barriers might be very different. So in terms of barriers in schools that do immunize, they're pretty pragmatic issues. Difficulty obtaining vaccination records was the most commonly identified one. Requirements for parental consent, inability to vaccinate non-VFC, difficulty billing private insurance, and adolescents being too busy. In terms of school-based health centers that don't immunize, these were pretty different order, the top two being financial, difficulty billing private insurance, and inability to vaccinate non-VFC. And these may have been the showstoppers in these schools. The other three were certainly noted, but in less frequently. We were particularly interested in HPV within the school context, and as I told you, about 80% currently are offering HPV. We asked the schools, has the school district been resistant to offering HPV? These were the responses. Not discussed with the school district, 34%. This may be the most effective way to deal with this issue. Not resistant, 58%. Only 6% had encountered mild or moderate resistance, and only 1.5% had encountered definite resistance. The next few slides, I would like to present an example of the Denver School-Based Health Center program that has been in operation for 20 years. It's actually their 20th birthday this year. And there are a lot of people behind the efforts at the Denver School-Based Health Center, and particularly around immunization delivery. Any of the successes I present are their successes. And I just want to underline the efforts of Dr. Paul Milinkovich, who is the director of the Denver Community Health Services and was the founder of the Denver School-Based Health Centers. These are operated by Denver Health, which is a vertically integrated safety net health organization in collaboration with the Denver Public Schools, a variety of mental health organizations, and the School of Nursing. There are 12 school-based health centers, 6 in high schools, 6 in middle schools, and the middle schools also have feeder elementary schools. And as elsewhere in the United States, there are high rates of free and reduced lunch and medically underserved populations that they're serving. 6,800 students received services in 2006 and 7 for a total of almost 33,000 visits. In addition to being low income, these are predominantly minority students, 71% Hispanic, 13% Black. And here's just an example of one of the clinic rooms at one of the high schools. Because the Denver school-based health centers have been around for a while, there's actually been a fair amount of data looking at their effectiveness, and I just want to point out a couple of studies about immunization delivery. A couple of studies have shown that students using the Denver School-Based Health Center are more likely than those using community health center services alone to receive a flu vaccine, a tetanus booster, and a hepatitis B vaccine. Another study looked at immunization cost per dose at the school-based health centers and showed that to be significantly less than a local HMO-based program, primarily because government-purchased vaccine was available at lower cost and because parents did not incur work loss costs. And I think that's important in terms of when we look at these vaccines that require multiple doses and multiple visits to a primary care source. I want to get back to the issue of how do we fund vaccines in school-based health centers. And Denver hasn't solved this problem, but I want to tell you what we do and bring it up as something maybe we could discuss as a group. About 77% of vaccines provided are to populations eligible for VFCs, so there's no problem there. Because the State Health Department recognizes our school-based health centers as part of the public health system, 317 funding is used to pay for the 23% with CHP Plus or commercial insurance. In our case, there have been various attempts at billing for the small percentage of patients with commercial insurance, but these have not been very fruitful, primarily because of problems with accurately identifying insurance carriers, and it's just not been cost-effective to spend the time and the money. So I just want to quickly take you through the process in Denver. Immunization delivery begins with enrollment into the school-based health center. There's first a pre-registration mailing to parents. They are instructed to bring in their current immunization record. They are then consented to be enrolled in the system. Those are collected, and they can also enroll on a continuing basis throughout the year. At school registration, handheld records, the Colorado State Immunization Information System, and the Denver Public School Database are checked to verify immunization status. And if kids are not up to date, the parent is given a VIS form regarding the vaccine. Ideally, then, vaccine-specific consent forms are signed and collected right then, although they may be collected throughout the year. The consent forms are then entered into a local database, which functions as a tickler file for reminder recall. On a weekly basis, reminders are generated for students with consents, and they're called to the clinic during their off time or during class time. They simply get a little message from the nurse, come to the clinic. When they receive an immunization, then the CIIS or the state registry is updated. So I just want to show you a couple of slides, comparing data from the first half of the year last year to the first half of the current year. Although Hep A and B have been a focus for immunizations in previous years, during the current school year, there's been a focused effort to vaccinate against Tdap, meningococcal vaccine, and HPV, including an aggressive enrollment and reminder recall. So that's why I'm comparing last year, first half of last year with the first half of this year. And one of the things we see is that the percent of students that were enrolled in the school-based health center, which is usually about 80% of the student body, that used the school-based health center by 12/31 was 29% last year, 44% this year. This slide shows the strides that have been made in immunization delivery, comparing last year at mid-year, the green bars, to this year, the purple bars for each antigen. And each bar demonstrates up-to-date rates for an antigen, with the exception of HPV, which indicates one or more doses were given. As you can see, there's been really major jumps in these rates, particularly for meninge, Tdap, and obviously HPV is a new vaccine. But to have 81% of users vaccinated by mid-year, I think is a pretty good success. So I want to end by briefly summarizing some of the pros and cons of school-based health centers and immunization delivery. Obstacles faced include limited distribution of school-based health centers across the country. I think this is one of, obviously, the biggest limitations. These are difficult to finance. It is difficult to bill commercial insurance for vaccines. It's difficult to determine up-to-date status of students, and there are challenges in obtaining consents. And unless you're careful, this kind of care can promote record scatter. However, the assets are pretty good if you've got one. Most school-based health centers are in high schools and middle schools with adolescents who are in the most need. So the fraction of people that don't have a health care home is much higher in these schools. When there is a school-based health center, immunization delivery is augmented for students with other sources of care. School-based health centers, as I said, are also the only source of care for many. School-based immunization delivery can save money. School-based health centers tend to be quick adopters of new vaccines, as you could see from the HPV slide. And they have a captive audience. They have enormous capacity to ensure immunization if they've got a consented adolescent. So I just want to end by saying that school-based health centers, if they're there in partnership with the medical home, serve an important role in increasing immunization coverage for hard-to-reach adolescents. Thank you.